Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett, here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. We have Tim Bergen on, founder of the newsletter On Beyond Investing, or you can go to his website, onbeyondinvesting.com. Welcome back to the show, Tim.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Absolutely.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, so I know you like obscure investment, special situations, things like that. I wanted to ask you about, there's an Irish bank that I know you do have a position in this, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so there's an Irish bank that I thought you had a position in. I'm glad that you actually do. Otherwise, that would have been a very weird way to introduce this episode. There's a company called Permanent TSB. They're a bank based in, I think they're based, what is it, based in Dublin, Ireland?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about that. You know, you brought it up to me. I thought it was kind of interesting, and I wanted you to talk to me about it on the show. So all you.
Sure. So I guess the easiest way to start is there's an interesting quote. I think it was Bruce Berkowitz after the 2009 crash. Mm-hmm. And he said that, the safest loan a bank makes is a loan during, like, after a blow up. And if you think about it, it makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I thought that was a really interesting point. And so, because all of a sudden, like, the credit committee is, you know, the bank isn't worried about growth. They're worried about return of capital.
Right.
So, and the borrower doesn't have a ton of options. So they need to put down more security or a greater deposit or a higher interest rate or whatever. So the bank has a, you know, stricter credit culture, and they have leverage to get better terms. Mm-hmm. And obviously, conversely, the worst loans are written during boom times when credit's given out too easily and so on and so forth. And I should also say that I have dual citizenship, so I'm Irish and Canadian.
Yeah,
so over the years, I've spent I've spent lots and lots of time in Ireland over my childhood and adult years. So,
I was interested for an Irishman. You have a great Canadian accent.
Thank you. Thank you. I actually even worked for Bank of Ireland for one summer back in university.
Interesting.
So after the housing market blew up in Ireland, and it was a crazy blow up, pretty much the equity of all the big banks were completely wiped out. And if it wasn't for the government, the shareholders would have been completely wiped out. So I invested in Bank of Ireland, and that worked out pretty well. And then Permanent TSB IPO'd, I think it was 2 years ago. And so I was just being paying attention to them. And what's interesting is the shares are down pretty substantially from their IPO. I think they IPO'd at 450 euros a share. Now it's trading at 187, 190, something like that.
And I'm looking too. They seem to have an ADR that's over the counter as well.
Yeah, I don't think that trades.
Really?
Like, I think it's listed, but like, I remember I tried to buy some for my son and I just couldn't get a trade done.
So you have to convert to euros?
Yeah.
And then what exchange are they on for people that might want to invest?
I think they're on the London and Irish exchange.
So what, did you just buy them on the London exchange?
I think I bought them on the London. Yeah, it was easy to do through Interactive Brokers is what I use.
Okay.
So the shares are down substantially from the IPO. And so right now it's like a million euro market cap. Mm-hmm. And you have to, there's a lot of moving parts, but their underlying earnings of the bank, if you strip out extraordinary losses from loans, which I'll get to, and they had some restructuring, were roughly 150 million this year. So the stock's trading at a PE of a little over 7. And it's also trading at 40% a book. So the company has roughly $21 billion in loans. And so if you want to think about the book value side, the real issue is they still have $5.3 billion of non-performing loans.
So what do you value those at?
Well, they've put up 49% provisions.
Okay.
And so what's interesting is the bank is actively marketing $3.7 billion of those. And if we deal with the remainder, a lot of the remainder are still classified as NPLs, but even though they are paying permanent TSB current interest, like they might have changed certain terms of the contract that don't allow it to be classified as performing, but they are paying as if they were a performing loan. And there's some talk that the ECB is going to convert those over. But on the sale of $3.7 billion, like that would reduce their NPLs substantially, and I believe they'd be sub 10%, and then this would be a bank that could look to pay out dividends. So even if you just think, like, let's say they paid out a 50% payout ratio on $115 million, like that's $50 million on, that's a 6% dividend yield.
Yep.
There's a lot of political issues. So the problem with Irish banks is that it's very difficult, and it's changing, but it's very difficult to foreclose on someone, you know, due to historical events in Ireland of the English removing the Irish from their homes. It's like a taboo thing. However, this is like 10 years after the crisis, and they still have people that really haven't engaged for the last 5 years. So they've just been living basically free. Huh. And that's roughly $2.2 billion of the $3.7 billion, and some of it may get reclassified as good assets, and they may not sell, but whatever. And the provisioning on the portfolio overall, I believe, is 45%. So they're in a situation where if they sell this portfolio at anything greater than 55 cents on the dollar, then the bank is actually booking gains. But it's somewhat ironic because they're just going to sell it to typically, you know, private equity, typically American companies that just go in and foreclose.
Yeah.
So I guess it's taboo for the banks to do it, but then, you know, they're effectively just selling to somebody who, for political reasons or for whatever reasons, you know, they can do the foreclosure. And
so weird. So that is so weird.
It is weird. And it's becoming a big political issue, and there's political parties in Ireland saying that they shouldn't be allowed to sell these assets. But then the ECB saying, well, you have to reduce your NPLs, and the Bank of Ireland, like the Central Bank of Ireland, is obviously saying the same thing, like you need to clean up your balance sheet.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a political mess. But ultimately, like, that will, you know, something constructive will be done. In some ways, I'd rather they just hold on to these loans and restructure them themselves, because, you know, a vulture fund is probably looking for at least 10% returns.
Right.
So I would imagine, you know, imagine if the bank did it themselves, or if there was some joint venture with the government, which there is some precedence for in Ireland, they probably could achieve better results. But even just selling it just allows them to move on and actually, you know, operate a bank.
Yeah. When you were involved in Bank of Ireland, did they have these same problems?
They did.
Okay.
They did, but
that worked out though. You said.
Yeah, that did very well. That was different. Like, so I think Bank of Ireland was trading at, I think, 20% of book, and there was a real issue that they could still become insolvent. Whereas now I think it's trading closer to book value, which I don't actually think it should, but, you know, whatever, that's where it's at.
Yeah.
And in permanent TSBs, other peers trade at at book. But there's one important reason that these guys don't trade at book, and that's of the remaining $20 billion in loans, they have $13 billion of what's called tracker loans.
Okay.
And tracker loans are like one of the stupidest banking products ever issued. But what they are is, so the bank funds at their deposit rate, or, you know, the bank funds at the deposit rate, right? So the trackers were linked to the ECB overnight rate, right? So during the crisis, the yield from these mortgages plummeted because the ECB cut to below zero, but obviously the funding rate for the banks skyrocketed, specifically for the Irish banks. So all of a sudden, these mortgages actually became negative yielding assets for the, or negative carry assets, or whatever you want to call it, for the banks.
Yeah.
So as a result, the net interest margin of the bank is really low. It's like 1.8%. But even still, like, they're still earning 115, or the underlying earnings power of the bank is, you know, somewhere in the 100 to 120 range. Even at that low net interest margin. But this is kind of one where I think you have to be somewhat patient. But over time, like, obviously these loans get paid down, people sell their houses, different life events happen, and, you know, over the next 7 to 8 years, these substantially will roll off. But also what's interesting is, especially if you're concerned about interest rates, as interest rates go up, specifically in Europe, permanent TSB stands to benefit, because I think $20 billion of their loans are tracker or variable. And obviously, you know, deposits tend to be sticky. As interest rates rise, their NIM should rise substantially. And the company has done a really great job. Like, I think the NIM went from, I want to say 1% 2 years ago to, you know, 1.48% at the end of 2016 to 1.8% now. So management has done a really good job of kind of right sizing the bank, and it's just this last NPL issue that needs to be resolved.
Yeah.
And there's definitely going to be legal costs and accounting costs associated with the loan sale. But still, you know, at 7x earnings and 40% of book, like, a lot of that's already priced in.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, if you take a big picture step back, is there's only like 4 or 5 banks in Ireland. And for guys like this, actually Brexit was kind of a good thing, because it probably will stay only 4 or 5 banks in Ireland. Whereas before, you always could add one of the bigger UK banks move across, but that seems unlikely at this point. So like, these guys have 13% market share. And, you know, from my understanding of the Canadian market, like, an oligopoly banking industry is super powerful. And if you look at the returns on equity that the Canadian banks have earned, although I think it's somewhat dubious at this part of the cycle.
Yes.
You know, there's still structural reasons why having 5 banks in a country is an extraordinarily profitable thing to have. So it's an oligopoly. They have 13% market share. And so if you just look at something like, let's say the NIM goes from 1.8 to 3%, and the Irish economy is growing at roughly 3% per year, over the next, call it 10 years. You know, it stands to reason that loans should grow 3% over that time. And since there's 5 banks, these guys, they'll probably at least capture that 3% growth. You know, you're looking at something that could be worth somewhere between 9 and 11 euros in 10 years' time, just through the normalization of the trackers coming down, the net interest margins increasing. And that's not taking into account, like, you know, fee incomes increasing, or too much in the ways of, you know, economies of scale with costs coming down. So it has all the things I like. Should benefit from higher interest rates. Trading a substantial discount to book. Trading at a low price to earnings. It's got some near-term political issues that, yeah, I think likely they get resolved, and the provisions are pretty good. You know, hopefully you don't have to sell the loans much below 55 cents on the dollar. But even if they sold them at 50 cents, like that's only wiping out 2 years of earnings. So it's not the end of the world. The overall bank's only 10 times levered. They have plenty of capital. And then if you take a long-term view that, hey, I'm owning a bank that owns 30% of the Irish banking sector, and net interest margin should improve, and the Irish economy is actually has been doing quite well. I think it's been the best performer in Europe for the last 3 or 4 years. This seems like a really interesting position.
Yeah. What allocation is this for your own portfolio?
Oh man, it's big. It's not huge. I guess it's 15%.
Okay. Cool.
There's other things I should mention that, you know, the government still owns 75% of the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that creates an overhang. But I think this is a position that's probably easier in some ways for an individual to own. Like if you're a portfolio manager, you can kind of understand, like, this is going to take quite a long time to play out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that patience is rewarded. And that's somewhat easier to do if you don't have to release quarterly statements.
Right, yeah. Interesting. Anything else on the bank?
I think that covers most of the basics.
That's an interesting situation.
Yeah, I think so. I guess one thing to mention is the shares are fairly illiquid since like only 25% are floating.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, I was just trying to see if I can pull it up here. They have one large shareholder that I think owns 7 or 8%. So it doesn't always take much to, the shares can be quite volatile as a result of just, a couple extra sellers than buyers.
Yeah.
So people might take a look and say, wow, these are, super volatile, but, I think that's because, the free float is probably, less than 15%.
Yeah, well, I have faith in my listeners to not get skeeved out by that if that's an investment they'd want to make.
Yeah.
We tend to have pretty smart listeners here.
I don't doubt it. And if one of those smart listeners wants to tell me I'm wrong, I'd be interested to hear it.
If someone wants to tell you that you are wrong, what's the best way for them to contact you?
The best way is probably by email at tim@onbeyondinvesting.com.
Okay.
Cool. Or I'm on Twitter at onbeyondinvest.
All right. Perfect. Anything else, or you want to call it a day?
I think we'll call it a day.
All right. Sounds good. Well, anyway, Tim, I appreciate you coming on the show. And then just for the listeners, if you want to get in touch with Tim, as he said, email is tim@onbeyondinvesting.com, or you can follow his Twitter @onbeyondinvest, and then newsletter onbeyondinvesting.com. It's great to have you on again, Tim, and I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, excellent. Always a pleasure, Eric, and we'll chat again soon.
All right, I'll probably see you at the Berkshire meeting.
Yes, you certainly will.
All right, perfect. Have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.